From the Center for Investigative Reporting in PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. In April 2015, the streets of Baltimore erupted.
Signal 13,
signal 13.
We have a patrol car that's under assault. Get down and hover.
We need you down here. We're getting
free. Throwing
the rocks at the right
part of
fire.
Out.
It was like a war. They humming them back.
So let's start spraying them with the pepper
foggers.
We have PG County.
Just because I'm walking down the street, they want to pull me over. So first rock I picked up, I threw it. I ain't even gonna lie.
The protest started with the death of Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old black man who made eye contact with a police officer and took off running. A group of cops chased and arrested him for carrying a knife. They loaded Freddie into a police van where he sustained fatal injuries. On the day of his funeral, unrest broke out. Its root causes were decades in the making. But many people heard about what happened to Freddie Gray and asked, why did he run in the first place? In this hour, we look at two cases of running from cops that try to answer that question. It's a collaboration with WYPR in Baltimore that was first broadcast in April on the two-year anniversary of the unrest. We begin on that night in 2015. The intersection of Pennsylvania and North Avenues in West Baltimore was the epicenter of protest and looting.
You seen like a whole army of people just at every store, taking everything. Hey, everything.
And everybody was knocking each other down. They was coming out with all the pills they could come out with and the TV off the wall inside there.
I'm going to keep it 100 with you. I want one of the police to spit, blow a kiss, do something so I can do something. Because if I do something, all my homies going to they be going to be popping off. All that hands up, we don't shoot, let's pray. Get the. You think they pray before they shoot us?
The evening after Freddie Gray's funeral, at this corner known as Penn North, police, at first, largely hung back as people threw bottles, sacked stores, and burned empty police cars. Then the fire truck started arriving.
Then we see the CVS catch on fire. Next you know, boom, we're responding to that call. Then they're throwing a 2x4 at us. You know, I mean, usually people in the city love us because we're taking care of their mothers and their grandmothers, but that day, we were nobody's friend. I tell you, man, it was crazy.
Police threw tear gas. Protesters linked arms and formed a line, and an uneasy calm fell over the intersection. In the haze, a line of police advanced on protesters, beating their nightsticks against their riot shields. Reporter Mary Wiltenberg lives a mile from there and reconstructed what happened next.
At Penn North that evening, there was this iconic image, an eerie photo that made headlines worldwide. In the middle of a smoky intersection, a young man on a bike wearing a gas mask facing off against a line of riot cops. All kinds of people who were out at the intersection that day, protesting or documenting or just watching, noticed the guy on the bike, raising one fist in the air.
When I think of this area, when I think of Penn North, when I think of the riots, I think of him with the gas mask, riding around on the bike.
You know, who has a gas mask? Like,
yeah,
just laying
yeah,
around.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he...
Handy.
It
like,
was so,
that's what
like...
made him look so cool.
And he was looking like a damn king in the middle with his hands up. And he was like, damn, I wish I was him. It was just great to see no fear.
That same young man, wearing a red and gray hoodie, had also appeared a few minutes before in the background of a live CNN report while a reporter was talking to a community activist.
How far is this going to go?
As far as they take us. As far as they take us.
What does that mean? Watch yourself. Watch
it means what's behind me right now. Exactly. What's behind me now? See? As far as they take us.
Here, the reporter spun around to see water spraying up into the air behind him.
If you just saw that, they just, while we were talking there, just cut the hose with a knife, trying to thwart the efforts of the authorities to actually turn out this fire.
The guy in the red and gray hoodie had poked the hose twice with a pocket knife.
4901, please be aware they're cutting the hose. They're cutting the hose to the hydrant right at North Avenue and Hensley.
Then the young man headed down the street on his bike. Police were watching, but couldn't spare the manpower to follow him. The guy on the bike? That was Greg Butler. I met him shortly afterward. He was 21, confident, big smile. Over the past 2 years, I've gone with him to a dozen court appearances, and we've talked a lot about what he did and why. Here's how he remembers the scene when he arrived that day.
You had the Muslim Brothers creating a line between the police. You had young kids on bikes. You had women crying.
You hear young guys cussing out police and throwing bottles. And when you sit back and just look, it's just like, wow. You know, this is my city letting the world know that we understand what's going on with us and we ain't standing for it.
Greg is from Baltimore. He grew up in a rough part of town with his two sisters, sometimes his dad, who was in and out of prison, and rarely his mom, who was in and out of prison and addicted to heroin.
I remember being 4 or 5 years old, and I'm sleeping on the floor, and I haven't seen my mom in days, and I don't know where my dad is. And me and my sister are feeding my little sister.
The kids relied on each other, sometimes went hungry. But Greg was bright, focused, stayed out of trouble. He became a basketball star.
Literally slept with the ball, like a pillow, you know.
Captain of the team at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, or Poly, the most selective public high school in the city. He won a full-ride scholarship to college. Then Greg's dad lost his job. Greg took on more hours at work, his grades slipped, and he lost his scholarship. Shortly before the unrest, he landed back in his old neighborhood, no longer a sports star or a college kid, feeling like a failure.
At some point, you feel defeated, you feel beaten, and like, I can't get over the hump. And I am the first person in my family to go to college, but I don't have anybody in my family who can relate and understand that now I need you more than ever.
The night before the unrest, violence hit close to home for Greg. His good friend's dad was killed. Greg spent the evening with friends at a bar talking about people they'd lost. When he got home in the wee hours, he sat up Googling, wondering if he might have a role to play in his city. Not as a basketball star, but as some kind of activist.
I researched the number of people killed in my city, and I found out that I was born in the year that had the most murders in Baltimore, 93.
353 murders in 1 year, still the deadliest on record.
So when you find the familiarity between yourself and, you know, the situation, you're like, I was almost meant for this.
The next day, when he heard what was happening at Penn North, Greg felt like he had to be there. A friend gave him a ride most of the way and loaned him a gas mask. When he dropped Greg near the smoky intersection, Greg says he spotted an abandoned bike and hopped on. After riding around a while, he saw this fire hose that had just been hooked up to a hydrant. He felt in his hoodie for the pocket knife he always carried, and he ran up and stabbed it once, then a second time. A year and a half later, he tried to tell me why he'd done it.
The best way that I could explain it, it's just like, we tired of everything. It's whatever, I'm doing whatever I want to do out here. It's nobody that can touch me. You know, y'all catch me tomorrow and snatch me out of the car like y'all been doing. But today, I'm gonna do whatever I want. Hindsight being 2020, I probably wouldn't do it again. But in a moment, it made all the sense in the world.
That evening in 2015, as water rained down, strangers hugged and high-fived Greg. And he did a little happy dance that was caught on camera. Then he hung around the intersection for hours, having intense conversations with strangers about how to fix Baltimore. He'd taken a risk, and it appeared he'd gotten away with it. Nobody had gotten hurt. Deputy Fire Chief Carl Zimmerman was in charge of the fire ground at Penn and North that day. Afterward, he talked to me about what Greg had done.
Why would you put a hole in the hose? He had no idea what the results of his actions could be. When you take away that water supply, all you get is fire.
Zimmerman said not everybody was out on the streets.
The good citizens in Baltimore went inside.
He pointed to his firefighters.
And then these guys went out and cleaned up what was left.
On his way home that night, craving a smoke, Greg spotted a looted 7-Eleven with its glass front door smashed out. Climbing inside, he went behind the counter and picked up a pack of cigarettes. Suddenly, plainclothes police who'd been casing the store ran in. They ordered Greg to the floor, searched him, cuffed him, and took him outside to wait for the transport van. But when it pulled up, Greg made a split-second call.
I took off, and the guy that had me, he was nowhere close to catching me. The police officer that did catch me, he used the bike that I had. If he didn't have that bike, I don't think they would have caught me.
I asked him why he ran.
There's two answers to that, right? My political answer is that the landscape of the day was just so hectic. I didn't know if the police had me, what they would really do. But also from the street point of view, they caught me too easy. You know, it caught me way too easy. You got to work for this.
Greg knew once they booked him, that was it. But if he ran, he had one last shot at freedom.
You know what I mean? If you ain't, just relax and get ready for your peanut butter sandwich.
Greg spent over a month in jail. He was eventually charged by the state of Maryland for running from cops and by the federal government for cutting the fire hose. He faced up to 25 years for that. The morning of his state trial, the courthouse was a zoo.
Live at City Hall.
We're waiting to get into court. We're at 9:30 this morning.
Well, eventually, the defense will call the defendant, William Porter, to the stand. And
William Porter, the first of six officers to be tried for Freddie Gray's death, was on trial three floors down from Greg. The line to enter the building stretched down the block. The cafeteria had been converted into a media center, and protesters gathered across the street.
Shut it down!
Greg Butler does not deserve to go to jail for 5 years for poking a water hose. Greg Butler, we are here!
And the cops are getting off scot-free. The two guys who beat up Freddie Gray, they could get convicted and not go to jail for as long as he would go for a freaking water hose. Get the hell out of here.
No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, police.
For a surreal few days in December 2015, Greg was shuttled back and forth between Baltimore City Detention Center and state and federal courthouses. While his lawyer in state court painted Greg as a novice wrongdoer, federal prosecutor Philip Seldon portrayed Greg as a scheming criminal.
Because Mr. Butler provided an alias name, provided an alias date of birth, and an alias address. So that, coupled with the fact that he actually fled from law enforcement, gives the idea that he actually had a consciousness of guilt associated with his conduct.
One of Greg's federal public defenders, Lucius T. Outlaw, countered. He said it was important to consider Greg's actions in context.
This was a day where there was protests, rioting, and looting because a young black man was put in handcuffs and put into the back of a van and then found dead. For me and him, seeing a police officer, the natural instinct, even me, today, law degree, college, even today, my natural instinct is to turn and go the other way because you don't know what happens.
Mary Wiltenberg brought us Greg's story. Later this hour, we'll hear how it ends. The Justice Department put out a report on their investigation into the Baltimore Police Department suggesting that young black men may have good reason to run for their lives when approached by Baltimore cops. When we come back, the story of another man who ran and lost his life. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.